This week on the Auto Trader Podcast.
Listen's had Qashqai. Yeah. They've had Cedric.
Oh yeah, Cedric is one of
them. So I mean, that was one of those where you like, that's almost a literal name. And they're not the only ones to have done that, because Opel Adam.
Yeah, Adam actually, yes, that's also an interesting one.
There's an interesting story behind it, because it's named after Adam Opel, who was the founder of the Opel moniker, or the Opel brand. And so they named it Adam. But for those that don't know that backstory, it's like, well, Opel had to name it something, so they named it Adam.
Adam, there you go.
You know, it's like,
this is the name we picked, we went with it.
This is my car, this is Bob. Meet Dave.
Pretty much that.
My Honda Dave.
Welcome to the Auto Trader Podcast, the weekly show where we talk about cars and everything else more. I'm your host, Mr. Tayed Zambiri, and I have my esteemed colleague here, the man, the myth, the legend, the man who knows how to do skids, cabriolet expert, and much, much more. Mr. Chad Lukoff.
I don't know if I'd call myself a cabriolet expert. I own a few, that's all.
Good cars, though. Very good cars.
Thanks, dude.
So we have a bit to chat about today. On today's show, first segment is going to be Hot or Not, where we are going to be discussing some weird car names that have come up. Then we're going to be discussing the Alfa Romeo Milano. Actually, it's called Junior now. In yes, but no. And in Heat Seekers, we are going to be discussing some exciting events coming up and what you should look forward to. And last but not least, Ask Auto Trader, where we are going to be answering one big question and one you should really pay attention to. Some very weird car names.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first ones that's going to come up is the launch, which actually happened recently, the Jaeku J7. The new SUV from the Chery sub-brand. Now, what does Jaeku mean exactly? It's a portmanteau of the word Hunter in German, which is Jäger, and then cool, meaning cool. So, Hunter cool. What's your thoughts on that?
I mean, we know that the Chinese manufacturers have a different approach to many things. And their approach to naming conventions is also rather novel. And you can kind of understand it. I mean, it's not Mandarin or, you know, Cantonese or anything of the sorts that they're trying to work with. They're actually trying to work in a global language, which is a little unfamiliar to them. So the fact that they're putting a little bit of effort into different languages and, like you say, a portmanteau of Hunter and Cool, and they're trying to blend it all together, it's somewhat innovative. Whether it's always going to land or not, that's a bit of a different story, because there have been a couple of weird and wonderfuls, we have to admit.
Yep.
But there's been weird and wonderful from like the dawn of time. All I want to say is let's be thankful that we don't get their actual sort of Chinese model nomenclature, because that's usually just alphabet super numbers out the wazoo.
The catchiest code that you can ever want, the GR78956 7000 390T.
Yes, it's exactly like that.
Rolls like off the tongue beautifully.
B, you know, it's just always so strange. Both of us are headed to China a little later on, and we're going to be seeing this firsthand again. And that was one of the things we've been before.
Yeah.
And just as you do, you take a look around and you want to see the different vehicles, because you're seeing makes and models that you don't see, you know, here in South Africa. And then you, ooh, what is that? And you look and you're like, I'm probably going to throw my back out if I try and pronounce that. But so the Jaeku, and then they've kept the model name fairly simple, J7.
J7 is all you need to know.
So, and that's along the lines of the GWM side of things, which is run with H5s, H2s, H6s, that sort of stuff. And that's simple enough.
Easy to keep up with. I mean, the first thing I thought of when I heard Hunter Cool, I thought, reminds me of that Boney M song, Daddy Cool, for some reason. But here we are. Anyways, then in terms of just interesting naming conventions as well, one that has been quite famous over the decades is Lamborghini naming their cars after famous bulls, pretty much, that were used in, is it Aventador? What's the Spanish name, actually? I'm not 100% sure.
All of them would be. I mean, whether it was Huracan, Aventador, Kutash, they were all named after
famous bulls.
Famous bulls from Spanish bullfighting. And it was just the whole raging bull mantra theme that they were trying to carry across. You know, the coat of arms is the raging bull, and they've just stuck with that. They're not the only ones to do that. VW with
the winds.
No. So VW are tribes.
Really?
Yeah. So they've got Tuareg, Tiguan, except for now, like T Cross T Rock and that sort of stuff. But I'm trying to think of some of the other ones. I'm going blank on them. But those were, you know, tribes that had names that started with a T. And from Northern African and all over the place, it was Maserati that did the winds. Levante, Ghibli, some of them like Quattroporte, not really, but the more modern names are based on winds. And I didn't know that people named winds. that was the weird bit for me was, who names a wind?
You feel a little bit of a breeze. It's like, what do you say in South? It's like, oh, this is the lacquer wind. It's got a particular hit when it hits your skin.
So I get it. I mean, because in Cape Town, we know we haven't given it a different name, but Cape Town's known for the Southeaster. So it's a prevailing wind that pulls through there and carries different sort of climates and meteorological events, you know, and changes of season and that type of thing. It's just, it's predictable. So when it's come around more than once, they give it a name.
Well, you learned something new. Let us know in the comments what you thought of that. And then on to a more interesting one. So this is in Japan specifically. So Mazda has a tipper truck, but the particular variant of that tipper truck, it's this is the full name. This is called the Mazda Titan Dump. Make of that what you will.
It's I think that's your 12-year-old mind that's working at this one. I mean, this is just, you know, it's a typical tipper truck. It is a side tipper. It's a dump truck. I mean, that's where they're going with it, Tay. I know this because I have the brain of an adult.
But in the same sense also, this is the thing about children's mindset with adult money, and this is my issue, is that I will buy this because it has a good name.
Because it has the name dump in it.
Pretty much.
We've had, I mean, over the history, there's been some absolute zingers.
Yeah.
The one that always really sticks out for me, and once again, it's named after a tribe, was Nissan Qashqai. So Qashqai is a tribe. Once again, it's a tribe. I can't remember from where, but it always just did my head in because of the spelling of it. Because it goes against the typical English language rules of a U following a Q.
Yeah.
So it's Qashqai. And I'm like, that's not a proper word. And it just really does my head in. But yeah, Nissan's had Qashqai. They've had Cedric.
Oh yeah, Cedric is one of
them. So I mean, that was one of those where you like, that's almost a literal name. And they're not the only ones to have done that, because Opel Adam.
Yeah, Adam actually, yes, that's also an interesting one.
There's an interesting story behind it, because it's named after Adam Opel, who was the founder of the Opel moniker, or the Opel brand. And so they named it Adam. But for those that don't know that backstory, it's like, well, Opel had to name it something, so they named it Adam.
Adam, there you go.
You know, it's
this,
like,
this is the name we picked, we went with it.
This is my car, this is Bob. Meet Dave.
Pretty much that.
My Honda Dave.
And speaking of name changes, also interesting. So I think our dear colleague, Mr. Sean Nurse, we should probably be name him to Nurstappen, considering the GR Cup win. Actually, two wins, actually, that he's had at Kailami. Yeah. Dual victory. No, give it up for the man, actually. Give it up to him.
So, yeah, Sean did really well now this past weekend. And it was
I know him. He's famous.
Yeah, there you go. It's seeing Sean behind the wheel of his GR Corolla. So he is the one. If you're ever watching the live stream or anything of the sort, look out for the bright green details. All the cars have the same sort of branding and livery on them. And sometimes it's a little tricky to see the Auto Trader on the side. So you just look for the green flashes there. You can see it on the wing and on the mirrors. And there's some nice elements on the bonnet as well that are bright green. So that's Sean's car. He was actually But I mean, listen, it was a large field.
Oh, yeah.
So there were about 18 cars on the track at the same time there, which is the largest that we've ever seen. But this is because they're combining three different classes. So there's the GR86 Cup, the one that I raced in last year. And
those videos out, by the way. Very good videos.
And so those are in the hands of, once again, development drivers and the likes. So there's the GR86s. There's the GR Corollas now, which is the media challenge. So that's the Corolla Cup. And then they brought in the Yaris's as well. And those are now in the hands of dealers and dealers that have GR zones. So areas of their dealerships where they sell just GR products and GR merchandise. So there were 18 cars there. He was fighting up against Toyota GR Academy instructors, experienced race hands, guys that have raced way back when in like Group N touring cars and that type of stuff. And then amongst these youngsters. And it was actually Alex Shaheeny that put a set of ears on him in qualifying.
Jeez, and that was a very tight race.
Very impressive. I mean, Sean's got a fair amount of experience and he's pretty quick out there, but Alex came in there and took pole position away from him.
Interesting race.
It wasn't without
qualifying, actually.
Well, I mean, first race, Sean managed to get past him relatively early. Mm-hmm. He was also having to fight off one of the instructors, Paul Foss.
And Paul is properly quick.
So he was in a Yaris, and the Yaris and the Corollas are surprisingly well matched. They run the same sort of three-cylinder, 1.6-liter turbocharged engine, similar power outputs. There's a little bit of a weight difference, but with that weight difference comes different handling. We're not going to dive into the technicals of that just yet. But Sean had to really fight hard to get back to the front of the field, and then unfortunately the race was red-flagged. Yeah. One of the Corollas went off track, rolled. Hannes, we hope you're okay. Of the media contingent. And unfortunately, the same sort of thing happened in race two. It was a big three-way fight between Sean, Paul Voss, and Alex Shaheeny. And Sean says he just saw this orange flash spear off in his peripheral vision off to the right, and also just picked up a little bit of an issue and put it into the barrier outside of turn one at Kyalami, which, I mean, is a very, very scary place to go off. And just a reminder that this is still very, very real. It's still very dangerous.
So the next round is going to be at Swartkops, I believe.
That is correct. Yes, 18th of May.
Roundabout. So make sure you stay tuned for that and watch our man Sean do his thing. Moving on to yes, but no. What are we going to be talking about here? So Alfa Romeo announced a new crossover SUV called the Milano. Now called the Junior.
The Junior, yeah.
It just says Milano on the plate, sir. But that was such a sudden change. And the reasoning from what I read was the Italian government banned the usage of the name Milano. So hence why they went with Junior. And Junior is not just, you know, let's just scramble together and let's get whatever name we can. Junior actually has some pedigree and history to it.
Yes, no, it does. And it's a name that they have used on some of their products in the past. But it was that you know, they went, they actually polled the public. Like, you know, what would you like us to name it? And the public were the ones that came back and said, oh, Milano, you know, it's a name that's synonymous with the area and where Alfa Romeo started. And, you know, this is a great callback to the heritage of Alfa Romeo. And then the government stepped in there and waved their finger and said, no, you can't call it this car. So they reverted back, but they've handled this exceptionally well.
Yeah.
Because even Alfa Romeo has come out and thanked the government for the additional PR, giving them a thumbs up and said, hey, thanks for causing a little bit of controversy around our latest model. You know, Google search trends are on the up.
Have a second thumb even.
a second thumb. And listen, exciting little crossover. Mm-hmm. All of them are electrified. So there's a hybrid version and there's a full electric version. Yeah. And I think there's, in total, there's three different power outputs. So two different electric power outputs and then a hybrid version as well. So very contemporary, very Italian in its execution. This is for those Alfisti that loved vehicles like the Mito and the Giulietta. This is the spiritual successor to those. Modern, I do like what Alfa Romeo is doing. I haven't had a chance to sample the speaking of nail, speaking of names, the toenail. It's the Tonale, but...
Someone is shouting at us saying, no, it's pronounced Tonale, you're getting it wrong.
Yeah, but everybody else, colloquially, we just call it the toenail. I haven't had a chance to sample that one, but I'm a big fan of both the Giulia and the Stelvio. Mm. And this Junior, we can't call it Milano, because here we go. We're giving it airtime now.
There we go.
You know, it should be a great
Alpha Me Junior.
Alpha Me Junior.
There we go. I don't know. I'm not too sold on the styling of the Milano. I'm seeing blends of different vehicles in the sense that in the front, I see more of a Renault Captur almost. Now you can't unsee it.
No. You know what it is? It's those C-shaped headlights. Yes.
Yeah, the headlights.
I see that there. Okay. So, I mean, it's got these C-shaped sort of headlights with those DRL elements that are high up in the bonnet there and then the headlight going down. But I do like that big open air dam and the way that they've changed up that the Alfa Romeo shield in the front, just to give it sort of squared off and include the serpent and the sword emblems in it. I just think that really reminds me of, if you can remember in the 90s, there was the Zagato designed SZ and the RZ.
That thing was brilliant.
So I'm seeing traits of that in this one around the back.
I'm seeing
not
a lot
too
of,
far off. There's a little bit of SZ RZ in this because with the red and black in it, the two-tone combination with the black roof and that red body just really does make me think of SZ and RZ, but in a slightly, dare I say it, a softer, more feminine way, because those were very boxy, very angular, angry looking cars. And this just has a far more palatable appearance to it. I think that looks good. I think that really does look good. But yes, possibly a little generic because you said Captur, and I'm seeing it in the C-pillar as well.
Yeah, in the C-pillar, and then also the rear, I'm seeing a bit of Kia EV6, albeit more toned down. But I think this is better executed.
There's quite a bit of Kia in the back there,
With the light bar in particular.
Yeah.
And looking inside, I was like, this looks very Toyota-y, dare I say it. Someone's going to smack me for that, but I'm seeing a lot of it within the dashboard. Because I've seen with a lot of Alfa Romeo, it's elegant in the interior, and you can see that, someone took the time to take it back to, let's say, like the 156, or even let's take a recent car, the 159 JTD, I believe that's the variant name.
Yeah. Well, there was just
it's a flowing interior,
terrible
driver focus, but still, it was a beautiful looking car. I know with this, it does look good, don't get me wrong, but I don't think that it's the best that Alfa Romeo can offer. Considering their recent designs.
Fair enough. And I get what I can understand why they're doing it because it's a brand that has a lot of heritage and there's a lot of culture behind it.
The culture.
You're wanting to appeal to a newer, younger audience, especially if it's an electrified vehicle. Let's see if we actually get it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is a global launch and introduction or reveal of a vehicle. Mm-hmm. Whether it's going to make its way locally is another story. I am seeing more and more Alfa Romeos on the road. Maybe it's just a little bit of Bader-Meinhof syndrome where I'm more receptive to noticing them because I've formed the synapses in my gray matter. But it's I really hope that Alfa Romeo's current products are coming across as better value propositions and that they're starting to shake the stigma about it being unreliable and a depreciation nightmare because it's largely unfounded. Mm. It was a problematic era for Alfa Romeo and they've largely worked through it.
I mean, even with the Giulia, for example, that, from what I recall, I believe it was an ownership survey. I stand to be corrected there.
Kinsey report.
Yeah, Kinsey report. Yes,
which I mean is a highly respected study into service and maintenance costs.
Mm-hmm. It came out on top in terms of service and maintenance costs, and I sat and I thought the Alfa Giulia did that. And then
I know this because I've actually taken a look at it because I've considered an Alfa Giulia for myself. I love the way they drive. I love the way that they look. I think it's just a very sensible vehicle if you're looking for a D-segment sedan. And when you're sitting and you're looking for a D-segment sedan, you need to compare things like the Alfa Romeo Giulia to the likes of the Audi A4, the BMW 3 Series, Mercedes-Benz C-Class.
The usual famous suspects.
Tried, tested, established. We don't have VW offerings there anymore, but in any case, or Ford, you know, many of them have fallen by the wayside. But of those that remain, the Alfa Giulia is still more affordable, or at least it was in the last report, which I think was done in 2020.
Yeah, maybe? Around about that era.
But it was
around
about there, just before before lockdown. And its operating costs, its spares and its services, the parts components, or the part components for services, wear and tear items, and also crash repair, came out cheaper than any of those established, more popular brands locally. Which lends itself to suggesting that it's a more affordable vehicle to run. Generally, it doesn't seem to be overly problematic either. One or two small little niggles, but they're not riddled with reliability issues the way they were when you're talking 159 eras, 164s, that sort of stuff.
So there you go. Alfa Romeo Giulia. Make sure you're searching Auto Trader for that, because we have a few up on site. So you can peruse those, and who knows, maybe you might be buying an Alfa Giulia today. Now, moving on.
Is that also one of those that has a weird name? Like you've just actually named it a female name?
Giulia.
She's going to do her head in.
Moving on to heat seekers. So what's going to be happening? What's coming up that's actually interesting? And a few car launches that are going to be really exciting for everyone to check out. And I think one of the most coveted ones would be the Hilux GR Sport. Now, we've seen a lot of beefy buckies out there. You know, wide wheel arches, very capable, going over sand dunes and all that. And the Hilux GR said, okay, you guys have come out. Now it's time to present myself. So I believe the launch for that is going to be coming up soon. And
that is mid-month.
Oh, yeah. So
mid-next month. It's got these blown arches, uprated suspension, different tires. It's a more off-roady, rugged
lifestyle sort of
double cab. I saw one in Saudi Arabia.
Oh.
But it had much larger arches on it. That was like a proper wide body one. And I was told, no, we're just getting the slightly enlarged spats. We're not getting the full metal treatment.
So you're not getting the full wide, you're getting the small wide.
Yes, you're getting a small wide, yeah.
The next car, and I think I'm probably going to be the one most excited for this because I do quite like a small car. The Kia Picanto, that's actually going to be launching soon as well.
Yes, student's favorite, hey?
The student's favorite, the yoga and Pilates teacher favorite.
Yes. This new one is far more aggressively styled.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of the Sportage styling.
Even Saltos to some degree, actually.
Yeah, and Saltos. I think that they are trying. I wouldn't be surprised if they're going to start pushing this to a slightly more crossovery sort of design. It's still a hatchback, but it's got these big upright lines to it and this large opening in the bumper.
It's loud and proud, really.
It really is. It does look like a bit of a face swap.
Yeah.
It really looks like a bit of a face swap in my books. Not down the sides. I mean, it still looks largely the same. Do we have a picture of the back end of it? Back looks very similar to the front. You know, that light bar, the vertical tail lights. But the back end profile hasn't changed all that much.
Yeah.
You know, this GT line version has that faux diffuser down there. And of course, nice alloy wheels on it with, you know, black with that polished finish.
The diamond cut. It's a popular choice these days of styling I've seen for a lot of manufacturers.
It's classy. It's
even the light bar, same thing as well.
Yeah, very similar. So
it will do well, definitely. But the thing that I'm seeing with Kia now, we actually had this discussion the other day as well, is that Kia is moving more from what we've expected, like let's say in the early 2000s, for example, in that, you know, good value budget vehicles, but that now we're going more upmarket. We've seen it with the likes of the EVs, you know, overseas and that, and even other products as well with some of the saloon offerings and much more. Now, we don't know the pricing for the Kia Picanto yet as of the time of recording this, but from what we could see, even just from that picture alone, we can see that, okay, this is more of an upmarket super mini. So it makes me wonder, is this going to be now stretching into Grand I-10 territory in terms of pricing? Let's say maybe starting 250, 100, around those lines.
Possibly. And I mean, they need to play in that 200,000 rand mark. If they can keep it in at that around about that 200,000 rand mark, I think it's going to be still be a contender and a player because, like we say, it's that sort of first car, but I don't really want to go for the proper, and we're not going to call them cheaper nasties, but the real budget beaters, which are the likes of your Celerios, Espressos, Quids. This has always just been that one step up from that. So you consider a Picanto or a Swift.
It's more like the Goldilocks car, if anything.
Very much, very much. Yeah, it's the this one is just fine. Yeah, let's see what it's like to drive. I don't doubt that it's going to be an agreeable product because, like you say, Kia, both Kia and Hyundai, the Korean manufacturers that are prominent in South Africa, have progressed and they've built themselves up to become, from entry level, hey, we need to price this so that you just climb behind the wheel. Mm. The price has got to be the attractive bit because the name is not attractive enough.
Mm.
To the point where the name is now attractive enough because the product is attractive enough that they can charge premium pricing. And we've seen them grow up. And yes, there's now some aspirational value to some of these vehicles as well.
Mm.
And nobody's scoffing at a million rand Staria anymore or a Palisade, you know?
Brilliant cars. Yeah.
Because they're cracking vehicles and they're competitive in that price range as well. So they're not overpriced.
Mm.
They are genuinely well-specced, well-built, and they've shown to be reliable as well.
Oh yeah, true that, definitely. And there's a bunch of them on site as well I've seen for sale. So make sure you're searching for that as well if you are looking for vehicle within that segment. There's a whole lot of Picantos. I've seen them a lot on the roads as well. So definitely not a bad buy at all.
No, it is one of those that I could recommend if you're looking for a first car or a student car, something of the sorts. It's not that time of year where we're shopping for student vehicles. But if you're looking for a cheaper runabout or you're looking for something, if you need to downscale, your current car is just a little too thirsty on petrol, costing you a little too much, or it's a little long in the tooth and you're looking to downsize a little bit and get something that's a little more agreeable for the congestion, Picanto is really worth considering. I've put several people in Picantos and they are over the moon with their choice. They love it. It is a very, very friendly and agreeable package.
I think it's one of those entry-level vehicles when I jumped into it, drove it around, and I said, this just gets the foundation right in that it's just at the right price point. It has a good feature set, specification, actually, I think is the better term to use. And just overall, when you jump out of it, you're like, this is a good car.
Yeah.
I like what I drove. No, that's the beauty of it. But moving on. So next up, Simola Hill Climb. The famous, famous Simola Hill Climb is coming up soon. And as usual, there's some interesting things to check out.
Yes, there is. No pressure. I will be... I will not be with Suzuki this year. I will instead be with Mercedes-AMG.
Ooh.
And I will be taking the Mercedes-AMG C63S E-Performance up the hill and competing in Class A8 against some very experienced names and brands, the likes of Dion Joubert and Clint Weston, or who I'm competing against. It will also be the South African public debut of the C63S. So that's happening on the weekend of the 5th of May. Be sure to check it out. There is a live stream that goes out. Come and see Auto Trader, wave the flag high there, and try and get muscle that Merc all the way up the hill in a cracking time.
Guys, stay tuned for that, most definitely. So last up, we are going to just answer one Ask Auto Trader question because I'm also talking a bit too much at the moment. But anyways, so this one comes from Stardust90. Very classy username there. I quite like that. So what he wants to know is he's 27 and he wants to buy himself a Maserati Ghibli V6 diesel. And he says the insurance on that car is quite expensive. He said it's around the area of 20,000 Rand per month. And I think this needs a little bit of discussion in the sense that this is how insurance is calculated, at least in South Africa for the most part. And just everything pretty much that you have to consider. So just briefly, it's a case of when we calculate insurance in South, it's based upon a risk profile.
Yes, all insurance is based on a risk profile. And that risk profile takes into account things like your driving history.
Mm.
And at the age of 27, you've got less than 10 years of driving experience, unfortunately.
Key thing worth mentioning, actually, between that. He mentioned that he got his license in 2021. So that's also
so he hasn't been driving for a very long time. That is an important factor, yes. So he's only been driving for 3 years. Mm. He's 27, admittedly, fine. That's over 25 years old.
Mm.
But coming into that is the amount, length of time that you have been driving legally.
Mm.
Just because you could reach the pedals at 13 doesn't mean that you've now got all that experience. No, legally driving from the age of 18 years old, from when your license was issued.
Mm.
The area that you stay in, the conditions in which the car or the vehicle is kept during the day and at night, and this includes things like access control, security control, manned or unmanned, security cameras, perimeter fences, all that type of thing, locked garages, locked gates. All of that comes into play and that is factored in. That's why there are so many questions about it. The biggest one here is the fact that it is a Maserati.
It's an exotic car.
The main thing is how much does that vehicle cost to repair? Should something go wrong? And it's a Maserati. It's Italian. Everything is imported. While there's official dealers here, there isn't a manufacturer base setup here.
Mm.
So these are still largely under license. Everything is imported. You are going to wait for parts. Parts are going to be hellish expensive. It's just the nature of the beast. You could buy a VW at the same price point, a diesel VW at the same price point, and it would be a fraction of that to insure. Why? Because Volkswagens are manufactured locally, they're prolific here, and they have a manufacturer base.
That's exactly that. So I think try and maybe look for something a bit more conservative, if I may say, and then also something where insurance companies are going to look at this, compare it against you, and say, you know what, you're not so much of a risk because of the car that you're driving and everything in between. This is just going to be a better fit for you. If you enjoyed this, please don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. And also leave a comment if you enjoyed this and anything that you would like to, well, have known in particular. Anyways, that's it for now. Thanks, Chad, for joining on the show. And we will see you around soon. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Search Auto Trader.